Good evening. We invite your attention to the scripture on the card, taken from John chapter 4, the first 26 verses. Do you remember them two-week revival meetings? Many of you will. Some younger ones won't. Well, I guess Dan and I are going to enjoy some two-week revival meetings. There's a home start next week, this coming Sunday, and I'm amazed. Then how fast this week is going. It seems like it's sailing through. I don't know how it is for him, but I know how it is for me. But we're looking forward to sharing there. We're glad to have Brother Dan with us this week. Reading from John chapter 4. When therefore the Lord knew how the Pharisees had heard that Jesus made and baptized more disciples than John, though Jesus himself baptized not, but his disciples, he left Judea and departed again into Galilee, and he must needs go through Samaria. Then cometh he to a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near to the parcel of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Now Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being wearied with his journey, sat thus on the well, and it was about the sixth hour. There cometh a woman of Samaria to draw water. Jesus saith unto her, Give me to drink. For his disciples were going away unto the city to buy meat. Then saith the woman of Samaria unto him, How is it that thou, being a Jew, askest drink of me, which am a woman of Samaria, for the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans? Jesus answered and said unto her, If thou knewest the gift of God, and who it is that saith unto thee, Give me to drink, thou wouldest have asked of him, and he would have given thee living water. The woman saith unto him, Sir, thou hast nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. From whence then hast thou that living water? Art thou greater than our father Jacob, which gave us the well, and drank thereof himself, and his children, and his cattle? Jesus answered and said unto her, Whosoever drinketh of this water shall thirst again. But whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. But the water that I give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life. The woman saith unto him, Sir, give me this water, that I thirst not, neither come hither to draw. And Jesus saith unto her, Go call thy husband, and come hither. The woman answered and said, I have no husband. Jesus said unto her, Thou hast well said, I have no husband, for thou hast had five husbands, and he whom thou now hast is not thy husband. In that saidst thou truly. The woman saith unto him, Sir, I perceive that thou art a prophet. Our fathers worshipped in this mountain, and ye say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. Jesus saith unto her, Woman, believe me, the hour cometh when ye shall neither in this mountain nor yet at Jerusalem worship the Father. Ye worship, ye know not what. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour cometh, and now is, when the true worshippers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father seeketh such to worship him. God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. The woman saith unto him, I know that Messiah cometh, which is called Christ. When he is come, he will tell us all things. Jesus saith unto her, I that speak unto thee am he. Let's kneel before the Lord in prayer.
Tonight we want to look into John chapter 4 and an experience that happened around a very common substance, the substance of water. I'm grateful for those who have brought water here time after time. Water is something we're all familiar with. It's probably the most common, certainly one of the best known substances on earth. It covers three quarters of the earth's surface, and it's kind of unique in different ways. One of the ways that water is unique, I believe it's, I don't know if it's the only one, but it might be. There's not many substances that are naturally found in three states. Water can be a solid, or is a solid, is a liquid, and is a gas. And if you're at the right place at the right time, it's not really that uncommon. You can experience and see water in all three of those states at the same time. Not many substances happen that way. Water is essential for life as we know it. It's an essential part of our bodies. I've read that 60 to 80% of our bodies are water. And it's got some other unique properties as well. This can be explained scientifically and whatnot, but water has pretty high surface tension. Calm water, there's insects, and they won't have a very big footprint, but they can walk on water. And if you are careful enough and do it just right, you can get a paper clip to float on water. You can get steel to float on water. It's got some unique properties. Now, one of the unique properties of water that always interested me and fascinated me is the fact that water is unique in that as substances get colder, they get smaller and smaller and denser and keep getting smaller. But water is different than most substances. Water is its densest at 39 degrees Fahrenheit or 4 degrees Celsius. Just a little bit above freezing is when water is its densest. And as you would cool it down, other substances would get colder, but water from that point on begins to expand again. So much so that when water is frozen solid, it can take up 9% more capacity than it did at its densest state. And many of us have had experience with that unique property of water. It's called broken water pipes. It's called a radiator that in our automobile that we didn't get the antifreeze checked in time, or didn't get it, we forgot it or whatever, and we have a broken radiator. And so it's a unique substance. It's also, like I mentioned, it's unique for life on Earth as we know it. All the biochemical processes that are part of life, plant life and animal life, physical life I'm talking about, require water. And the conversation that was read for us a little while ago here from John chapter 4 started over a request that Jesus gave to a woman just for a drink of water. And by the time they were done speaking, the woman realized that water that she had come for was able to satisfy a physical need of hers, a physical thirst she had, but that Jesus was offering in her and could satisfy the thirst in her soul, a thirst that we all experience. And just as without water physically we cannot live, so our spirits cannot truly live apart from Jesus. We want to look at this familiar portion of Scripture, this familiar interaction between Jesus and this woman, and learn some things as we go along. In the first part, we see Jesus producing, as it were, a thirst in this woman. She had come for water for a variety of reasons, no doubt, but thirst is one of the things that drives us for water. Jackson, Mississippi, some weeks ago, experienced flooding. Their water purification facilities were overrun, not able to produce clean water for their city, and it's been a major disruption for Jackson ever since. More recently, I think just earlier this week, they've got the water flowing again, but can't drink it yet. It's not purified yet. And what a disruption that is. They're finding out how essential water is for them. Well, Jesus had been in Jerusalem, and Jerusalem's in the southern part of Palestine, and he and his disciples needed to go to Galilee. And in between Judea in the south and Galilee in the north is that area called Samaria. And an Orthodox Jew hated the people of Samaria. They despised them, and they were willing to take the long route around Samaria. They would cross the Jordan River and walk up through Perea, or travel however they were traveling, and come back across just to get around Samaria, so they didn't have to go through and deal with the Samaritans, which they despised so much. And if they were coming south, they'd make the same trip. They'd go back across the river, come south through Perea, and back across the Jordan, back into Judea. They hated those Samaritans because they were a mixed race. They had descended from the a mixture of Jewish and Assyrian people who had been imported after the Northern Kingdom had been overthrown, and they couldn't prove, they couldn't verify their Jewish heritage, and so Jewish hierarchy, the religious hierarchy, priding themselves in being descendants of Abraham. If you couldn't prove you were a descendant of Abraham, they looked down on you. And they wouldn't have anything to do with these people if they could avoid it. And so they despised them, and they wouldn't allow them to share in the worship of Jerusalem. And so they were still religious people. They came up with their own religion. They built a temple. They had their own religious festivals and so forth. And they had like a mixture of paganism and Judaism. That didn't make the Jewish people feel any better about them. They still despised them, probably fanned the flames even more. And they just hated each other. Matter of fact, if a Jewish person wanted to insult you really bad, he would call you a Samaritan. That's what they called Jesus. Said one place, he was back and forth with them and kind of presenting the truth to them that they were finding difficult to handle. And they just said, well, aren't we right in saying that you're demon-possessed and are a Samaritan? It was the most insulting thing they could say about him. Well, Jesus didn't share this warped view of the Samaritans. He had come to earth, and he was here on a mission. He had come to seek and to save that which was lost. And that included the Samaritans. It included his Jewish brothers and sisters as well. But it didn't exclude the Samaritans. He knew that in a few short years, he would go to a cross. He would shed his blood. He would take the punishment of sin of all the world upon himself. And that was for the Samaritans as much as it was for anyone else. And so when he was on his way to Galilee, he had a divine appointment with this woman at the well that was named after Jacob. It was near the city of Sychar. She didn't know they had an appointment, but she did. It was coming. And so they didn't take that route across the river and skirt around Samaria. They walked right up through Samaria on their way to Galilee. And as they traveled, they came to Sychar. And Jesus, being tired from his journey, no doubt he had been busy ministering earlier, maybe that same day or days before, and had used a lot of his energy, he sat and rested at the well there while his disciples went into town to get something to eat. And while he was there, this woman, Samaritan woman, apparently by herself, we're not told of any other people being around, can't say for sure they weren't, but it seemed like a private conversation, came, and she came to draw water. Now, It's been said that there's two ways to get into someone's heart. One way is to do them a favor. Do somebody an honest favor, something they didn't have to do, something they didn't expect, something they didn't wasn't really required of you. It often gets people's attention and they appreciate it. Another way is to acknowledge a need and say, would you help me? Would you fill this need for me? And that's what Jesus did. He was thirsty. He had a need. He had a physical need. And he said, would you please give me a drink? There in verse 7. Give me a drink. She was kind of blown away. It was unorthodox for a man to talk to a strange woman in public, especially for a rabbi to do so. You know, there are still countries like that in certain parts of the world, certain religions and certain cultures. The daughter and her family live in southern Thailand, and there it is a cultural taboo for a man to as much as shake hands with a woman that's not part of his family in public. It's very rigid and very strict, and apparently the culture at this time was equally as strict, and it shocked this woman. And she said, how is it that you, being a Jew, ask a Samaritan woman for a drink? I think it was as much a exclamation as it was a question. It was as much a statement of amazement and shock as it was a question, because it was highly unusual. It was totally out of order for their culture. And not only hatred between the races, the interracial hatred, which is nothing new, the Samaritans and the Jews, but this male-female barrier also was between them. And knowing also that a Jewish man not only hated Samaritans, but often in his prayers, he would thank God that he was not a Samaritan and that he was not a woman. He didn't have very high regard for women of his own culture, let alone a Samaritan woman. And so here's this Samaritan woman being asked by a Jewish rabbi for a drink. And she was totally amazed. And the parenthesis there in the last part of verse 9, the last sentence there, or part of the sentence, for the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. That's like a parenthesis on the end to help those of us and others who would have read this account when it was first written that were not Jewish to understand how unusual it was for this to happen. Now it says when the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans, it could be maybe translated they didn't ask favors of each other, or they didn't have things in joint use. They avoided dealing when they could, but the disciples had gone into town to buy food. They were going to have to do some kind of dealing in there. But they didn't share vessels, and they didn't ask Samaritans for favors. This was totally out of place. It was highly unusual. And what this woman might have been doing, she might have been trying to figure out what's this guy really up to. You know, does he have an ulterior motive? I mean, is he really that thirsty that he would talk to a Samaritan woman? You know, what's going on here? What is he really after? Well, Jesus responded to her shocked expression with a question there in verse 10. He said, it was her question, her expression and question that he was responding to. If you knew the gift of God and who it is that says to you, give me a drink, you would ask of him and he would have given you living water. Now we hear that expression, living water, we immediately think, well, Jesus is getting ready to give a spiritual application, and he knew what he was representing and what he was going to say. But to her, she had none of that. And to her, living water was a common expression that simply meant moving water, fresh water, clean water, drinking water, water that was at the bottom of this well that she had come to get water out of. And she said, well, you know, how are you going to get this living water? You have nothing to draw with. The well's deep. How are you going to get this living water? There's no other fountain around here. There's no other spring around here. There's no other source of clean, fresh water around here. How are you going to get this water? Well, she went on and said, are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us this well and drank thereof himself and his children and his cattle? And the short answer was, yes, I am. He could have said, yes, I am, but she wasn't ready for that yet. She wasn't ready to hear that. And so he explained that he was talking about a different kind of water. He was talking about water that would not only quench thirst, but it would remove thirst. It would take away thirst. And you'd never have to get another drink. Well, that piqued her interest even further. He said, you know, whoever drinks of the water that's here will thirst again. But whosoever drinks of the water that I give him will never thirst. But that water will be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life. The dear Samaritan woman didn't have a good understanding of what Jesus was saying, but water that she could drink so that she never would thirst again got her attention. Going for water day after day, carrying those heavy water pots back to her house was a good bit of work. And if she could take a drink so that she never had to draw water to drink again or for anyone else, that was going to save her a lot of work. And she was interested. She said, give me some of that water. I'll have some. Now she was ready for a drink. And so Jesus begins to take her further and promises that he can give her that water. He produced in her or revealed in her or brought out in her a need that she was not even really aware of. But now he's going to explain that further and promise that he can fulfill that need. You know, most of us, before we come to the Lord, are thirsty, and it takes us a while to realize really what our condition is. Years ago, I heard of a woman who had a persistent cough. It didn't matter what lozenges she used or what medicine she took or anything else that she tried, she could not get rid of her cough. She just was coughing all the time. Finally, she went to a doctor who listened to her carefully and examined her. And then he asked her a simple question. How much water do you drink? And as she thought about it, she said she didn't really drink water. She certainly drank some, but she didn't consciously drink any certain amount of water. And she couldn't say that she drank water. And so he diagnosed for her, or prescribed for her, a healthy amount of water to drink each day. She went home and began to drink water, and her cough went away. She had a problem, and she didn't know it. Our bodies need water to function. You go without water a few days. Of all the things, other things that you need, water is going to be the first thing that you ask for. I was talking with one of your sisters here last night who found a neighbor. Maybe you're familiar with this. Some time ago, was not responding, was not going in and out of her apartment door, didn't know what was going on, wouldn't answer the door. And finally she gained entrance, went in, and they determined that neighbor had been laying in her apartment. She had fallen for several days, maybe up to 3 days. And you know what the first thing that lady asked for? Water. And she was just about out of water. In a few more hours, probably 24 at the most, without water, she would have died. Oh, we need water to live physically. And without Jesus, the water of life, our spirits are equally as dead. This woman Jesus was talking to was dead and didn't even realize it. But once she indicated a desire for water that would satisfy her forever, Jesus went to her forever problem, her deepest problem. And it wasn't for water that came out of Jacob's well, it was for himself. And so with the skill and knowledge that he had, he put his finger right on her greatest need, her sin. And he said, all right, go home and bring your husband and come back here. And you know, that woman who seemed so willing to engage this Jewish man who had broken all these cultural taboos of speaking to her, a Samaritan, on top of that, a woman, so willing to talk and was back and forth, all of a sudden was not very talkative anymore. The shortest statement in all this passage that she said came next. She said, I have no husband. Well, Jesus was pressing on. She didn't have much to say, but he said, yeah, you have no husband. But you're right about that. You've had five, and you're living with a man now, but he's not your husband. You're right. You don't have a husband. She had to know who he was. She had to realize that he was no mere Jewish man that decided to travel through Samaria instead of going around. He was somebody special. And he was beginning to reveal that to her. And with that statement, he demonstrated that he knew the details of her life. Details that she was not so proud of. And she, like most of us, when confronted with the facts of our personal sin, was ready to change the subject, ready to talk about something else. You know, it's easier to talk about the weather or politics or current events or the neighbors or anything but our sin, to face our sin. It's even easier, much easier, to talk about religion even than our sin. And that's where she went. She said, sir, you know, I perceive you're a prophet. You're not just an average kind of guy. I perceive you're a prophet. And so I got to, you know, we see things a little differently. You all say that we need to worship at Jerusalem. But our fathers worship in this mountain, and that's where we ought to worship. But Jesus would not be sidetracked. He told her that where people worship, God is really a secondary issue. The most important thing is who we worship, and that we worship the way He desires to be worshiped. God desires, she told him, to be worshiped in spirit and in truth, and that He's even seeking people who will worship Him like that. Now, this woman, I believe, realized that that didn't really describe her. She was not a person who had worshiped God, even the God as she understood Him, with her whole heart, with her whole soul, with spirit, and with life. And so, being religious as she was, she said, well, I do know that a Messiah is coming, which is called the Christ. And when He has come, He will tell us all things. And Jesus then revealed Himself fully to her by saying, I that speak unto thee am He. Now I've read that what Jesus literally said was, I that speak unto thee, I am. In other words, in His answer to her, He actually pronounced, He actually used the name of God to describe Himself. So there was no doubt in her mind that she was speaking to the Christ. He had already revealed that He knew things about her, that He knew the details of her life that no one else could have told him. And it seems that at that moment she believed and put her faith in Jesus. There's more to that account, but let's jump now for just a short while to John 19. John 19 is the account of Jesus when He went to the cross. It was a few short years after His conversation with this woman there at Jacob's well. The Messiah had come, but He had been officially rejected by the religious authorities, and they had managed to persuade Pilate to execute Him. Earlier in that day, He had been scourged. They had taken that whip with a sturdy handle and lengths of leather of different widths, interwoven with bits of bone and lead to give it weight, tied Him, secured Him to a post of some kind, and beat His back and His legs and His shoulders till they were ribbons of flesh and skin, and there would have been lots of blood. A crown of thorns had been formed to mock Him and pressed down on His head. Again, would have been very painful, would have caused bleeding down over His face, down over His neck, down over His body. He had been spit upon. He had been mocked. He had been beaten with rods. And by mid-morning, they had Him out at Calvary and nailed Him to a cross, put nails through His hands and feet, and secured Him off the ground on a wooden cross. By that time, it had probably been 24 to 30 hours since He had slept. I don't know how you are, but when I'm really tired, things that otherwise I can handle get a little harder to handle. He was exhausted. He was beaten. He was on a cross with His bare back on that cross, needing to push Himself up on those nails to get a breath every time He needed a breath. And added to all the suffering that He had was an excruciating thirst. And he cried out, I thirst. He was bearing this abuse and laying down his life to provide that living water for that woman from Samaria and for each of us as well. He had committed no sin of his own. All the pain, all the abuse, all the shame that he was enduring was for others, for you and for me. One songwriter put it this way, I should have been crucified. I should have suffered and died. I should have hung on the cross in disgrace. But Jesus, God's Son, took my place. Another songwriter put it this way, He did it all for me. Each drop of blood he shed was for even me. When the Savior cried, bowed his head and died, praise the Lord, he did it all for me. Are you thirsty? Do you realize your sin? Have you come to Jesus for that water that satisfies? You know, he knows all about us, just as he knew all about that woman. There's nothing that we've done that will shock him or surprise him, because he knows it all. And tonight, he's still offering to whoever will take it that living water. Revelation 22, verse 17 says, And the Spirit and the bride say, Come. And let him that heareth say, Come. And let him that is athirst come. And whosoever will, let him come and take of the water of life freely. Is there anyone tonight who would like to take a drink of that living water? We give you the opportunity as we sing a hymn of invitation. What number will we use?
Number 154.
154 in the Brethren Hymnal. 154.